So just over 5 years ago, I went to my office early one morning and checked my voicemail. And there was one voicemail in particular that was really curious. And it was a message from this guy named Justin, and it was very cryptic, and he was very anxious and nervous, and he kept apologizing for what I wasn't sure. But in the end, he said, "Could you please call me back? And this has something to do with your father, Troy." Well, I took a little pause because, one, the manner of this guy and the message was a little strange, but two, because this wasn't the first time I'd received a totally random correspondence about my father who had died when I was 15 years old. But I waited a couple minutes and I grabbed the piece of paper that I wrote the number on and I dialed the phone, and after a few rings, I heard the familiar voice from the message hesitantly say, "Hello? Hey, Justin, Tad Monroe here. You left me a message yesterday and asked me to call you back." Silence. "Justin, are you there? Oh, wow. Yeah. Sorry. Oh shit. Wow. Okay. I can't believe you called. Well, I mean, of course you called. I mean, I left you a message and asked you to call me. Why wouldn't you? Wow. I just wasn't quite ready for it. I don't quite know what to do with this. Okay, sorry." He kept saying sorry. I didn't know for what. But you know what? I'm just gonna come out and say it. I'm just gonna say it. Is that all right? Yes, God, please, just say it. And what it was this: that my father was also his father, and that Justin was my half brother. And so then for the next 15 minutes, Justin told me this story. When my parents were 18 years old and dating, my mom got pregnant. And she lived in a small town, and her dad decided to ship her off before she started to show so that she could have the baby and give it up for adoption. My dad stayed back, and it was a tumultuous time for them, and they were kind of on again and off again and broken up and not broken up. And my dad would call one day and say, you know, "Let's get married." And then the next day he'd call and say, this is too much. I can't deal with it." And my mom was scared and afraid and wasn't sure she wanted to give the baby up for adoption and was really tired of my dad going back and forth. And so sometime when they were on this break, my dad happened to meet another young woman in town, 17-year-old young woman, and she turned up pregnant. Well, as the story goes, my dad denied it. The girl said it was his, and the family, insisted that it was, but my dad insisted that it wasn't. Well, this went back and forth for a while until finally my grandmother intervened. Now, my grandmother Marie is a formidable woman. She just passed away last year, but she was a shrewd businesswoman, and she was very, very practical, severely practical, if you know what I'm saying. And so Grandma Marie went in there and said, "I'm going to deal with this, Troy. You just don't say another word." And she went in and she brokered a deal. And part of that deal is apparently that she paid some sum of money to this family and this young girl. And then she told my father, "You are never to have anything to do with that child, that girl. No contact. Leave the family alone. I've taken care of it. Just move on." And apparently that's what my father did. Well, my mom stayed away. She had a little baby girl. She gave that baby girl up for adoption, and she came back, and after a few months, her and my dad got back together, and after a few years, they got married and had me. And a few more years later, they got divorced, and I only saw my dad for a couple months every summer and sometimes on birthdays and holidays. Well, Justin continued in his story. Apparently, he grew up in rural Montana in a small farming town, and his grandparents and his mother raised him. And at some point, they told him who his father was. And they also told him that he had a half-brother and a half-sister somewhere. And so as Justin grew into adulthood, he began to do research and try to find this biological family. And that's how he knew that my dad had died. He'd somehow saw it on the internet or was tracking it some way. And at that point, Justin would have been 20. I was about 15. And he said, do you remember that after your father died, you got a strange phone call the day after his funeral? And I said, you know, I do remember that. And he said, that was me. And I lied to you and said I was somebody else at the time because I wasn't ready to kind of come clean. And now it's been another 19 years. And every day for those 19 years, I've wanted to call you, but I've been afraid to. And then this year, I turned 39, the same age your dad was when he died. And I thought, I can't wait another minute. I got to call you. I got to reach out. So that's what I'm doing because you're the only link I have to this man that I've never known. Well, I mostly just listened to that first conversation. I didn't ask a lot of questions. I assured Justin that I wasn't upset and that I was glad that he had reached out. I asked, could I have a few days to kind of process this? And we exchanged cell phone numbers, and I said, I'll call you in a few days. And I got off the phone and kicked back in my chair, stared out my office window down 9th Street. And after a bit, I thought, you know, I think I'm going to call my mom. I think I'm going to do a little research of my own. So I dialed the number, and I called my mom, and I told her the story I'd just heard. And I said, so, do you know anything about this? And she pretty much corroborated that it was all true. And I wasn't mad. In fact, I just laughed. I mean, I told you earlier, this was kind of par for the course, these random correspondences about my dad. I mean, this kind of thing was always happening. And I said, Mom, you know, okay, and still laughing, I said, can we just make a pact right now? I mean, do I have any other siblings? There's this sister, now there's this brother. I mean, are there any other secrets? At this point, for God's sakes, why would we've gone down that road. Let's just get it out there, right? And my mom just laughed. She said, no, honey, I don't think there's anything else. But with your father, I'm not sure we can ever be completely sure. Well, I did call Justin back. It was a few days later, and he was really relieved, I think, that I called. And we began to share some more with each other just about growing up and our childhoods and kind of filling in some of the gaps for one another a little bit. And we became Facebook friends, and we started corresponding via email and Facebook messages and whatnot. And those first couple of years, Justin made several plans to come and visit me. But always right before he would come, something happened, right, that would postpone the trip or that he wouldn't be able to come. And I kept sort of this passive but open sort of posture. I mean, I kind of felt like this was Justin's journey, right? Like, I didn't really have anything I needed in this. I didn't really have anything that I needed. This was about him, and I wanted to be there for him. So I was just going to kind of let him figure it out. Well, then something changed. See, I had ascertained via Facebook that Justin was gay. And I also knew that he now knew through Facebook that I was a pastor. And I wondered out loud, I wonder if he is hesitant to meet me because he thinks, because he's got this, well, you know, understandable baggage about how someone connected with the Christian faith might feel about someone in the LGBTQ community. And so I wondered about that. And then I began to wonder, you know, it must have been hard to grow up gay in rural Montana in a farming town at that time. And I thought, you know, God, it must have been hard to live your whole life knowing that, not knowing who your father was. And like, I started thinking about all the risks he had taken to reach out to me and what and all of that meant. And I started thinking, you know, I'm going to do this differently. I what I want is that for once in his life, for Justin to feel like he's the pursued and not the pursuer. And so what I did was I called him up. And I said, you know, Justin, my girlfriend Holly and I, we're going to take a trip and go camping at Glacier Park and Flathead Lake in Montana. And I think at the end of that trip, I should just drop down into Missoula, which is where he lived, and visit you. And joyfully but somewhat anxiously, he said, great. That sounds wonderful. And so the date was set. So we'd agreed to meet at this brewery right down on the riverfront in Missoula. And it was a perfectly sunny day, not a cloud in the sky, hot. And Holly and I are walking down the sidewalk towards the front door of the brewery. And then I see and recognize that it's Justin from his photos on Facebook. And he's wearing a black sleeveless t-shirt and faded jeans and flip-flops. And his hair is balding and receding. And it's a mix of white and gray with a matching scruffy beard. And he looks much thinner than the older photos I'd seen of him, almost a little sickly. But then I see his eyes, those eyes, cool blue-gray eyes just like mine, just like my father's, and they're shining in the sun, wetted with a little bit of tears. And then I see that he's smiling at me, that shit-eating grin that creates the same lines under his eyes, under his cheekbones, as I have when I look in the mirror and in my memories of my father. And he hugs me. He says, "It's so nice to meet you. I can't believe you're here. I've waited my whole life for this moment." And so Holly and I and Justin, we get a table on the back balcony of the brewery overlooking the park with the river behind it. And Justin orders a light beer and tomato juice, which I thought was kind of weird. I ordered an IPA. And we begin to chat. We begin to talk and tell stories about our life and our growing up and where our adulthood had taken us. And I had brought stories and pieces of memorabilia to share with Justin, each one of them having a story, of course, that went with it. And Justin had question after question that I gladly answered and fielded. And we sat there sipping our beers, sweating and laughing, and sometimes Justin cried. It was this amazing time. And there are a couple of things that always stand out to me about that time and the subsequent months after. One is that my suspicions were affirmed about his nervousness of meeting me because he was gay and how I would feel about that. And I started to respond to him to sort of, you know, assure him of my support and love in that. And he said, "Stop. Don't say anything. I don't need you to say anything." He said, "I knew from the moment I saw you, what I've always known, what I've always believed, that you are warm and kind and loving and that you would always know me and see me." And now I'm starting to cry, right? And it was so poignant, not just because Justin affirmed how hard it was to grow up gay in rural farming Montana, but also how his whole life, it was more than that, because he never quite knew how he fit in and who he was because he didn't have this piece of his story. But now he had it as we sat together and he looked across the table into my eyes. And that was profound. But the most profound thing happened next, which was that I realized that, you know, this isn't just about Justin. This isn't just about what I can do for him. This isn't just about what he needs from me. And this light came on. And the light came on when Justin began to ask me about how I felt when my father died. And all of a sudden, it started to spill out of me. I said, "Well, you know, Justin, my father was always sick, right? I mean, from as long as I can remember, he was recovering from a serious accident. He had severe diabetes. He didn't take care of himself. And so I always saw my father as a sick man. Like, that was part of his existence, of how he lived." And I said, he when he finally moved the last few years of his life into the same town as I did, I didn't really take advantage of that. I mean, I was your classic, right, like, you know, selfish adolescent, you know, wanting to create distance and differentiation and not really value in my parents and really, you know, go deep with them. And I said, I knew he was sick. You know, I knew that he was on dialysis. I knew that he needed a kidney transplant, but it never sunk in how dire it was, because that's, I just felt like that's who he was. He was alive, but he was sick, and he would continue to be alive and sick. And then one night I was sitting on the couch after basketball practice, and the phone rang and my mom answered it. And I began to hear that she started to cry, and my stomach felt sick. And pretty soon she hung up the phone and she turned around, and I saw that the tears were streaming down her face, and she said, "Dad, I'm sorry, but your father passed away." And when she said those words, "passed away," it's like the whole world stopped and got silent. And you know, the first thing I felt wasn't grief. It was utter and complete panic. It was like this moment had passed that I could never get back. And I started freaking out and screaming and yelling, "Why didn't anybody tell me? He's always sick. Why didn't you tell me he was sick? Why didn't you tell me he was this sick? I didn't get to say goodbye. Why didn't I get to say goodbye?" And I blamed everybody, my mom, my grandmother, my father himself. And the reality was, I was sad, but I'd learned long ago to live without the presence of my father. I knew he loved me. I knew he was proud of me because he told me. But what I didn't get to do was tell him. I didn't get to say goodbye. I told Justin that ever since my dad died, I had these reoccurring dreams where he would show up in the dreams, and I would chase after him to tell him. And always in that dream, he would run away, and I would lose him, and he would disappear, and I couldn't find him. And I'd had these dreams my whole life. And then I said, "And then there's you." And Jody, my sister, who I was reunited with later in life, the one that was given up for adoption, and all these other people who call me, and my posture is always what I can do for you, and that I can help you know the Father you never knew. And I realized in that moment, as I was looking into Justin's face and Justin's eyes, that this wasn't just about him. That finally, for the first time, as I looked at Justin's face, I was looking at my father's face, and I was getting to say goodbye. The sun was just beginning to set as Justin and I said our goodbyes. We hugged each other, and he held on for a long time, and he said, "Thank you." And I said, "Thank you," meaning it in a totally new way. And we made plans to get together in the future soon, and I invited him to come out that next year. And if you'd heard us talking, you'd have thought, man, this is just the beginning. And then there was something about it that I knew, and now I know Justin knew, that we both knew that this was the end. And over the next few months, we texted and messaged now and then. And then eventually, the messages got less frequent. And all of a sudden, I realized it'd been about 10 months, and I hadn't heard from Justin recently. And it was a day or two later that I got a message from his mother saying that Justin was very sick. Turns out that Justin was HIV positive, and that over the last few months, his body had gone into full-blown AIDS. And at this point, he couldn't communicate, couldn't talk. He was on hospice, and he was very near the end. And a few days later, I got another message from his mom that said Justin had passed away. And she thanked me. She said, "Thank you so much. You have no idea how much that meant to him. You know, have no idea how much peace he had for his final journey because of the closure you provided." And I broke down and said, "No, thank you. You have no idea how much closure I had." And I said, "Thank you. Thank you for raising a beautiful, strong, courageous, funny son." A few weeks later, I got an invitation to attend Justin's funeral. But I decided not to. Because, you know, there are very few times in our life where we get to say goodbye on our own terms. Usually the ending of something is thrust upon us. And we do all we can do just in that moment to somehow fumble and respond awkwardly with a goodbye that we were neither prepared for nor if we even knew we wanted. But Justin and I had gotten to do it differently. We made a choice. And we risked. And in that risk, we got to say hello and goodbye. We got to share the most perfect hello and goodbye on a sunny summer afternoon in a beautiful place. And I couldn't imagine it getting any better than that. And you know, since that day, I've never had another dream about my father. But sometimes I dream about Justin. And always he and I are sitting in the sun, sipping beer, and he's laughing and smiling at me the way my dad did when I used to make him laugh. And in his eyes, I can see all of the longing that he and I and our father shared. And if he were here tonight, and I think he is in some ways, I'd say thank you. And I'd say, man, I wish you and I and Troy were still sipping beers together in the sun, laughing and smiling. But I like to think that you and your dad are somewhere doing that now. And at some point, not soon, but down the road a bit, I will join you. And until then, I'll see you in my dreams. Thank you.